You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman back from a fact-finding trip to Iceland and Sweden, and boy, did we learn a lot, which we'll be talking about as we go through the program, and of course, a lot in the news today as well. One of the things I find most interesting is, you know, because we've been talking about Citizens United on this program. I wrote a book back in 2001 predicting the Citizens United decision, and then Unequal Protection is the book, and then ended up having to revise it after the decision came out. New edition is out. And Stephen Colbert using that, this idea, corporations are persons, money is speech, the two core principles of the Citizens United decision, running this ad in South Carolina. Here it is.
Corporations, America's greatest institution. They built this country one job at a time. Mitt Romney says he's for corporations.
Corporations are people, my friend.
But Mitt Romney has a secret. As head of Bain Capital, he bought companies, carved them up, and got rid of what he couldn't use. If Mitt Romney really believes...
Corporations are people, my friend.
Then Mitt Romney is a serial killer. He's Mitt the Ripper. If you believe corporations are people, do your duty and protect them. On Saturday, January 21st, stop Mitt the Ripper before he kills again. Americans for a Better Tomorrow Tomorrow are responsible for the content of this advertising.
Fascinating. Seton Motley on the line with us, the president of Less Government, lessgovernment.org, at Seton Motley Twitter. Hey, Seton, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I am fine. So I know that you're supportive of the concepts put forward in the Citizens United Supreme Court decision.
Yes.
Doesn't that make Mitt Romney a serial killer, and shouldn't we be worried about that because he bought all these corporations and killed off about a quarter of them?
No, because corporations are people only in a legal sense, not in the actual sense.
With regard to murder laws, you and I are people only in the legal sense also. I mean,
No, we're actually human beings with actual life. This is a delineation the left doesn't grasp when they run stupid ads like this but are for abortion.
Okay, so are you saying that we're real people and corporations aren't, and therefore when the founders wrote the Bill of Rights, they meant us and not corporations?
No. Legally, in the law, corporations are people.
Where does it say that in the Constitution, Seton?
When you form a corporation, who
makes
the
word corporation does not exist in the Constitution.
Neither does abortion, but you back that, don't you?
This is not a conversation about abortion. This is a conversation about whether or not corporations have protections under the... Seton, we can all day long we can say that human beings have rights under the Constitution. The question is, do corporations...
You mean like right to life? You mean like for babies and
like,
abortion?
Or the right to the marry, the right to anything
okay,
you want.
Tom.
This is
okay,
not...
Tom.
Seton, are you suggesting that corporations should have rights under the Constitution? If so, where do you see that? I don't see it.
You don't see it? Well,
I've read the Constitution. I don't find the word corporation in it anywhere.
Who forms corporations, Tom?
Who forms churches? Are churches protected in the Constitution?
Yes.
Okay. Explicitly. Where does it say corporations are?
Well, no, they get the same. No, the people who form the corporation, their rights are extended to the corporation. Of course they are. They can't be.
Where does it say that in the Constitution?
No, it doesn't say that. The Constitution is enumerated.
Where does it say that in any law that's ever been passed by the House of Representatives, the Senate, or signed into law by the President?
Tom, why
in the history of this country?
Why do people who form a corporation lose their free speech rights, Tom?
They individually do not lose their free speech rights, Seton. You and I both know that. The corporation does not have, and should, actually it does, but it should not have free speech rights because it's not a person.
Well, no, it's a bunch of people who formed a corporation.
Yes.
Yes.
And individually, each one of them can speak. But as a corporation, are you suggesting that ExxonMobil should have the same protections? If you want ExxonMobil to have the same First Amendment protections on the Constitution as you and I have, do you want them to have the same Second Amendment Constitution? Should they be have the right to carry a gun?
Sure.
You want them to, you want them to have the Fourth Amendment right to privacy so they can do whatever they do in private and we don't have any ability to know what it is?
Yes.
Even though we are giving them limited liability that you and I don't have.
What do you mean limited? What limited liability? They get sued all
that's
the time.
Whole, that, no, no. The whole point of forming a corporation is that you put $50,000 into a corporation. The corporation runs up $1 million in debt. You bankrupt the corporation, and the people who form the corporation have limited liability. Their liability is limited to that original $50,000. If you or I ran up $1 million worth of debts, we would be held responsible.
We file for bankruptcy and pay a percentage just like the corporation does, Tom.
It's a whole different set of bankruptcy laws, and there are exemptions under those bankruptcy laws that apply to people. No, no, it's not actually. It is not. As a person, you cannot, Seton, you can't use bankruptcy laws to get out of your student loans, for example.
You need to come up with better examples, Tom, because right now you're striking out every time.
You can't. All right, so you think that corporations should have the right to lie about, for example, the effects of cigarettes?
When did I say that anyone had the right to lie about anything?
Well, we all have the right to lie. It's called free speech.
Yeah, so they can too, sure.
Okay, so you think corporations should be able to lie about cigarettes? They should be able to lie about asbestos.
Yeah, and then if they get caught, they get punished with lawsuits and breaking the, you know, and criminal and civil punishment, sure.
Just so like in other words, they shouldn't be allowed to lie. You're saying there should be laws against their law.
No, if they're breaking the law, Tom, corporations get punished. And private citizens get punished.
But if they're hiding, okay. So you know, where are the penalties for those corporations that have killed so many hundreds of thousands of Americans with mesothelioma through asbestos, and 400,000 to 500,000 Americans a year through tobacco?
One of the 100 that actually sues actually has mesothelioma. But go ahead.
Yeah, you don't want to go there with me, Seton.
No, I don't understand what your question is.
That's the disease that killed my father. I'm very familiar with it.
Well, I understand that, but it's a huge racket by trial lawyers.
And those corporations in 1935 knew that asbestos caused mesothelioma, and they kept it hidden.
And guess what? They've been punished, haven't they?
Arguably, have paid some fines. Many of them are doing just fine, thank you very much. But the people in those corporations, because of limited liability, because of the corporate shield, none of them have gone to jail, and yet people have died. Don't you think there's something fundamentally wrong with that?
What does that have to do with free speech, Tom?
No, I'm talking about the Fourth Amendment here, not the First Amendment.
Well, you just changed the subject, Tom.
Okay. So, bottom line, you think corporations are people, but you don't think that Mitt Romney's a serial killer.
That's absurd. Who did he kill? He killed jobs. He killed
hundreds of corporations.
Far more jobs than he killed.
Or he killed a bunch of corporations.
Well, fine. He also created far more jobs than he killed, which is much more than you can say about Barack Obama.
Can't we just agree that corporations aren't persons?
No, they have many of the same rights as people. Absolutely.
Again, where does it say in the Constitution corporations have
the
rights?
No, the Constitution delineates what the federal government can or cannot do, and then the Tenth Amendment says if it's not in the Constitution, it belongs to the
states
or the
to
people.
The states, not to no. The Ninth Amendment
and
is the people.
And
that's the Ninth Amendment.
And the people can't leave that one out, Tom.
That's right. That's the Ninth Amendment. But neither of those two amendments mention corporations. There's not an 11th Amendment that says and corporations.
The Constitution exists to enumerate the federal powers. It doesn't have to mention what the other rights are. It mentions what the rights of the federal government are. And if it's not there, it belongs elsewhere, including with the people.
All right. I'll let you have the last word out of that. Seton Motley, lessgovernment.org. Fascinating take. Thank you, Seton.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for dropping by. So, what do you think about Stephen Colbert?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And up next, Rick Perry. Very interesting. Urinating on corpses. Warmongers love war, but they don't want to be responsible for it.
All hail the corporation.
The breath, the bone, the cornerstone. The owner of our nation. All hail.
Yes, all hail the corporation. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Today is Martin Luther King Day, and there are many memorials and observances that are happening all around the nation of and to, in honor of, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and appropriately so. And one of my favorite of his comments was the one where, this one, he was talking about the Vietnam War, and he talked about a time when silence is betrayal. Here's clip 14, Jacob.
The time has come for America to hear the truth about this tragic war. Now, I've chosen to preach about the war in Vietnam today because I agree with Dante that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a period of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. There comes a time when silence is betrayal. The truth of these words is beyond doubt, but the mission to which they call us is the most difficult one. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. Nor does the human spirit move without great difficulty against all the apathy of conformist thought within one's own bosom.
Yeah, but I think the most important part of that was about halfway through, where he said there comes a time when silence is betrayal. And, you know, and the setup to that. And that's just so spot on. Meanwhile, Rick Perry thinks that violating the rules of war, now, I'm personally of the opinion that war is a form of mass insanity and that rules of war is virtually an oxymoron. But nonetheless, Rick Perry is of the opinion that violating those rules is no big deal. We have this report that these four Marines urinated on a corpse, and he essentially defended it. Here's Rick Perry, clip 6.
Well, obviously, 18, 19-year-old kids make stupid mistakes all too often, and that's what's occurred here. These kids made a mistake. There's not any doubt about it. Shouldn't have done it. It's bad. But to call it a criminal act, I think, is over the top.
Right, over the top. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that and he also said that the Obama administration, he blamed the Obama administration for condemning the actions in the video and for initiating a full investigation into these Marines. Now, to his credit, John McCain and a number of other Republicans have come forward and said, no, wait a minute, this is a crime. And in fact, the first Geneva Convention, at all times, and particularly after an engagement, parties to the conflict shall without delay take all possible measures to search for and collect the wounded and sick, to protect them against pillage and ill treatment, to ensure their adequate care, and to search for the dead and prevent their being despoiled. Now, that's the Geneva Convention. Rick Perry not only thinks that we should ignore that, but in previous comments, Rick Perry has suggested that the military should not be under civilian control. I mean, there's a reason why the president is the commander-in-chief of the military in the United States. And that reason, very simple, very straightforward, is that the founders of this country had seen country after country after country, and we have, you know, in the 230-plus years since then, seen country after country after country where the military was headed by the military, where it was independent of civilian control, or where it threw off civilian control and you had what, you know, military coups. From Pinochet in Chile through, pick your country. Burma, it's happened in Thailand, it's happened in Honduras, it's happened in El Salvador, it's happened in country after country after country where the military has overthrown the elected government or has taken control. And that and Rick Perry wants to move closer to that by saying, first of all, it's just this, you know, these kids. I believe that this is a slap in the face of the military. by Rick Perry. And John McCain said, I think a full and complete investigation is entirely appropriate. So it's really, you know, quite amazing. 866-97-THOM, our telephone number, Mark in Albuquerque. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for being there for all of us. Just a little thing on that Rick Perry quote. If somebody did that to U.S. soldiers, that man would be going ballistic.
Yes.
He would want to nuke them, okay? So we need to take that into consideration with these people. Secondly, the last guy that called you that was talking about the Constitution and corporations being people, you know as well as I do, the Constitution was written by very wealthy people. They had corporations.
No, they didn't. Not in the modern form. The modern form of corporations didn't come about until after the Civil War.
But in the furthest reaches of their mind, they could never have thought, we will make business people.
Right.
That is not the intention of the Constitution.
No.
To do that kind of thing. And it's totally wrong-headed thinking. And, you know, I don't know where this guy's coming from, but that has no place in the Constitution. Corporations are not people. If they were, we would hold them accountable and send the heads of them and the boards to prison every time they did something wrong.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is that Seton's perspective is shared by 5 out of 9 members of the Supreme Court, which is a majority, tragically. And here we are. Mark, thank you for the call. And we have to figure out a way out of that, and that's why I suggest that you go to movetoamend.org or sanders.senate.gov and sign up for these various amendments to the Constitution to say corporations aren't people. Sorry.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, a civil war breaking out over between evangelical leaders and your calls. I can hope that the fascists are about to lose. Fascism, of course, being the merger of corporations and state, or, you know, for that matter, I would say, broadly speaking, politicians who believe that corporations should have rights under the Constitution just like people, or that corporations are persons, are the same as natural persons, should have constitutional rights. Constitution doesn't say that. The founders of this country, the framers of the Constitution, did not envision that. Yeah, this is a policy that was wholly invented by the Supreme Court over a 130-year period, more or less. By the way, there's a civil war, Washington Times reporting on this, breaking out, quoting from the Washington Times article by Ralph Z. Hallow, a civil war is breaking out among evangelical leaders over allegations of a rigged election and ballot stuffing over this last weekend. They had this gathering of religious and social conservatives, about 150 of them. They were in Benham, Texas, at the ranch of Nancy and Paul Pressler, who are supporters of Rick Santorum. And after the second ballot, then they were trying to decide who should be the anti-Romney. Should it be Rick Santorum or should it be Newt Gingrich? And After the second ballot, Rick Santorum was ahead by 7 votes, which really is hardly decisive, you know, with 150 people. But at that point, the Protestants said to the Catholics, the Catholic leaders said to the Protestants, okay, I think we got this under control. Thanks a lot for showing up. See you guys later. And then they held a third vote without the Protestants in the room. And guess what? Rick Santorum, who's Catholic, so is Newt Gingrich, but by conversion. He used to be a Southern Baptist. And a lot of Catholics, you know, he's on his third wife, et cetera. They don't really think of him as a Catholic. After the Protestants left the room, the Catholics held a third vote, and Rick Santorum got 70% of the vote. So now the Protestants are all flipped out about this. And keep in mind, these aren't kind of your average Catholics or your average Protestants. These are the hard right folks who think that their religion should inform their politics. So now there is actually a group demanding a recount. They want a redo on this thing. It's fascinating. I don't know how to describe it as anything other than just absolutely fascinating. Ellen in Lowell, Massachusetts. Hey, Ellen. What's up?
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay. I just went from a speakerphone to turning on.
Thank you.
I've been so frustrated with the whole concept of corporations are people.
Right.
They are a group of people,
right,
not people themselves. Oh, so if they're people, then each individual family should be able to vote individually, and then they can decide what they can do, and they can have a vote for the whole family.
Right, and the family should be able to spend unlimited amounts of money supporting a particular candidate.
Yeah,
even,
and they can get together. They can have either individual votes, and then we should have everybody signed up again for the Smith family, the Jones family, the Gonzalez family.
Right. And this raises an interesting question because, you know, in a family, if the majority of the people in the family really didn't want the family giving lots and lots of money to a particular candidate, you would think that, you know, in most functional families, you'd have something that would be at least a quasi-democratic process. But with a corporation, you've got the CEO saying, oh, well, you know, we're going to give $5 million to this super PAC that's going to help Mitt Romney. And the employees have no say in that.
Exactly.
I mean, a corporation is not even literally a group of people. They are a legal piece of paper. Most of those people go home at the end of the day, and they're not part of the corporation. They're employees, but they're not, you know, legal. And whereas members of families at least have legal rights relative to each other, rights of inheritance and things like that. That don't exist with corporations. Excellent point, Ellen. Thank you very much for calling and making it.
I'm so frustrated about the difference between people and groups of people. Let's get the difference.
There you go. I'm right there with you. Thank you, Ellen. Very, very well said. Stuart in Seattle. Hey, Stuart, what's on your mind?
Hey, your earlier guest Seaton was saying that because a corporation was formed by people, that a corporation should have the same rights as people.
Yes.
It would seem then, by Seaton's logic, that if people created a Frankenstein, that the Frankenstein should have the same rights as people, shouldn't he?
If he's sentient, I suppose. Although a corporation is not sentient. You know, a corporation is no more a living, breathing, or thinking organism than is a car. I mean, you know, if we made a car, should the car have the right to, it's stretching the metaphor, but I don't think it's stretching it very far. Fascinating point.
I don't think the car should have rights. The corporation is sort of like an organism. It's a profit-seeking organism.
Sure.
It's got a life of its own, going out and seeking profit at the expense of anything.
Yeah, no, it's a creature of the state, to quote John Marshall, not the first U.S. Supreme Court justice. He was the third, but he was sometimes considered the father of the Supreme Court, the major Supreme Court justice of the era. He was appointed in 1800. The corporations are creatures of the law, period. Thank you very much. Well said. Larry in Williamsburg, Iowa. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Well, we're starting to get bombarded with these Keystone Pipeline ads.
Oh, really?
And not a single thing of it is true at all. I mean, they say they're going to create 200,000 American jobs and economic security. And
are they pointing out that this oil, that there's already a pipeline that brings oil to refineries from Canada to refineries in Missouri, Indiana, Illinois, and that refined oil is being used in the United States, but that this pipeline will take oil down to the export refineries on the Gulf Coast for export outside the United States?
No, they say that's going to be used here.
That's
going to be used here.
Right.
And, I mean, not a single thing. Why can't they make it so they have to have the truth in advertising is what they say, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. We used to have truth in advertising laws, actually, until corporations were determined to be people. Larry, thank you very much. Very well said. Joe in Pueblo, Colorado. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Yes. First of all, I apologize for being, I'm a lot more nervous than I thought I would be.
You sound great.
But I just basically want to make a statement about why we don't discuss things in a more moral,
framework
arena, as opposed to making reference to like our founding fathers and all that stuff. Sure, you know, they were human. Everybody's human. So that's why we should go more to a more
Yeah, a moral context. I mean, you had about a third of the founders were actually slaveholders. I mean, you can't call them the most moral of people. And so, you know, what, you know, we need to be finding our own compass these days. And I think we have, you know, over time, America has become progressively better and better. We've ended slavery. We've ended, you know, we've established women's suffrage. We're starting to take seriously the concept of war crimes. And although we'll see, you know, it's, you know,
but
step by step, we're getting.
I think we all have that moral point, that moral compass point.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. I think, and as a society, we need to identify it and focus on it, and use it as part of our decision making process. Thank you. Very well said, Paul and Everett. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was just listening to your argument with Seton, and I listened to you ask him over and over again if where constitutions are mentioned or where corporations are mentioned in the Constitution, and he conceded at the end that they're not. And if you follow that logic out to the end, then basically he just said that the Supreme Court granted a right to an institution that has no basis in the Constitution, which we know from Judge Scalia means that basically that all devolves to the state, and the state has the right to do anything they want regarding that since it's not mentioned in the Constitution. But it also means that the Supreme Court gave corporations rights as people and acknowledgement as people with no basis in the Constitution.
Right. Maybe we should give dogs rights, right? You know, I mean, that should be the question. A dog could bark, you know, once for Mitt Romney, twice for Newt Gingrich or something like that, you know. Should dogs have – well, actually, animals do have some rights, but not under the Constitution. I mean, we pass laws saying that animals are protected in certain ways. And I find it, frankly, bizarre that we don't protect the food animals the way that we protect individual pet animals. That's a whole other discussion. But, in fact, I think I'm mangling a metaphor here. But excellent point, Paul. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling and making it. Patrick in San Francisco. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Hi. I'm wondering about the I'm growing increasingly alarmed about the comments of the people in the right wing. Are they paying attention at all to the validity or the legality of what they're saying as much as it is an anti-Obama position?
I think it's more the latter than the former. You know, when you're talking about, you know, trashing Obamacare or trashing or you know, Rick Perry coming out and saying that this administration is, you know, he's condemning this administration for going after these Marines who urinated on this body. I mean, this, you know, who defaced or desecrated rather a corpse or a number of corpses.
So why aren't their legal handlers stopping them from saying things that are clearly blatantly anti-constitutional?
Well, because it's not against the law. It's not against the law to say things that are anti-constitutional. And it's not against the law to lie in campaign advertising. And for that matter, to some extent in many venues, it's not against the law to lie or to imply a lie in many other forms of advertising, too. It's really quite tragic. And I think that we need to be rethinking this. Patrick, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Oh, and I have to share with you proof that the comment that I was making last week about this whole Mitt Romney Bain thing is going to work to the benefit of the Republicans after this. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back. Let's see here. Peter in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Peter, thanks for listening to AM 930. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Tom. I wanted to offer a line from literature, an Anais Nin novel, describing a character I think is especially apropos of describing Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Romney, the vulture capitalist at Bain.
Mm-hmm.
She's speaking of a character, a businessman, who had mistaken the throbbing of an abscess for the beating of the human heart.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. And Nin was a brilliant writer, most famous for her erotica, but she actually she wrote a lot of very, very brilliant things. Very well said, Peter. Thank you for calling and sharing that with us. That's a particularly good one. Kyle in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Kyle, what's on your mind today?
Say, I wanted to mention at the expense of me getting put on the DHS list, for the first time, I went and rented a copy of the Bowling for Columbine for the first time. I'd never seen the movie.
Oh, Michael Moore's movie, yeah, on gun control.
Yeah. Yep. And I just wanted to mention people should, I think, should dust off their copies of that.
It is a brilliant, it is an absolutely brilliant book. And you had some thoughts on corporate personhood, Kyle, you wanted to make, or was that it?
Yeah, well, I think he touches on a lot of issues that go along with that.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, some of his personal commentary do mention, you know, this movie is not about, you know, necessarily about the massacre, it's about corporations.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And his most recent movie, Capitalism, A Love Story, is very much about that. So, Kyle, thank you very much for the call. You know, well said and spot on. Joe in Seattle, you wanted to talk about the Marines.
Thank you. Yes, I did. I'm a little bit horrified, especially since we're going to have a big influx of veterans, that the general public can't tell the difference between a criminal and a patient. You know, the PI, I'm a Vietnam era veteran and I get to hang out, and I say that sarcastically, in PTSD clinics because of my personal difficulties. And the kids that went into training or the young men or something are not the same anymore. They don't have the ability. What did they have to do to him to get him to stand there and shoot other human beings? And the fact that everybody's worried about a little pee-pee while they're laying there on the ground with their brains out tells me people are not focusing properly. Those aren't criminals. Those are patients that everybody's talking about. And as everybody returns home and tries to reassemble in their neighborhoods, people need to be more aware of the condition of the soldiers that are returning.
Yeah, of the damage, in other words, the war does to people.
Not all injuries cause you to limp or bleed.
Yes.
And there's no such thing as a post-traumatic syndrome. Once you have it, you own it. And, you know, some of those guys were redeployed. And somebody's shocked that they lost part of their humanity for a while. They were doing jobs we didn't have enough nerve to do. In fact, I don't think they should have been there because it was an illegal war, and the cost has been
high. I'm absolutely with you. And an excellent point. Thank you for making it. And yet, at the same time, on the one hand, you're right that people who behave like this are patients. They're not soldiers. On the other hand, we have a command structure and a policy, as it were. You know, George W. Bush redeployed people over and over and over again, even involuntary redeployments that forces them into these situations where they are soldiers. And as long as they are soldiers, they should be held accountable for the behavior, in my opinion. So, Cheryl in Santa Barbara. Hey, Cheryl, what's up?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling in regards to the equal access to the courts by corporations versus individuals. I've had 9 cases in the last 7 years. I have a law degree and my master's in engineering, but I haven't sat for the bar. 6 cases were against banks, 4 I prevailed, and I was just declared a vexatious litigator, which will ruin my life. I'm from Michigan, I'm a high school dropout, went to college, have a master's in engineering, a law degree, and the judge didn't even look at my evidence. So I'm looking for people who are interested in corporations versus I have 9 and 7 years and six are against banks with all the corruption with banks, and I won most of them, and yet I was just declared a vexatious litigator where I can't use the courts anymore, and it'll destroy my 4.5 years of law school.
That's remarkable.
While I was a single mom raising my son as a single mom, and now all that I worked for is down the tube. I'm 51.
Cheryl,
so I just wonder your opinion and if you know of any group that might be interested in this topic.
You know, my opinion is that I'm horrified by it, and the National Lawyers Guild, I think, would be very interested in this. That's the progressive version of the American Bar Association. The National Lawyers Guild, you know, is a national organization that you can join as an attorney, and they came out against the war in Vietnam or in Afghanistan and then in Iraq. They came out and said that George Bush was a war criminal and that he should be prosecuted. They have been at the forefront of defense of personal injury lawyers who are, you know, and opposed to this so-called tort reform, which basically says that if a corporation harms you, there's an absolute limit of typically $250,000 per person for the rest of your life that you can get, and those kind of things. So I would check out the National Lawyers Guild, Cheryl. They have a great website. They've got some good people there. We've had, I'm trying to remember her name. We've had the president of the National Lawyers Guild on this program a number of times. Marjorie is her first name. But in any case, we'll be back. It is, we're gonna get into, in the next hour, this whole and fascinating concept of Gingrich benefiting.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Last week, when I was broadcasting from Stockholm, Sweden, I made a comment. Actually, I think I first made it when I was on Tuesday when we were doing our show, or was it Monday? I forget. Time is a blur when you're traveling. But earlier in the week when we were broadcasting from Reykjavik, Iceland, I made the comment that I was of the opinion that all of these attacks by Republicans on Mitt Romney, principally by Newt Gingrich, but also Rick Perry got in the act, John Huntsman got in the act, so several of them, you know, they were in on it, doing these, that these going after his time at Bain Financial, that these attacks would, while everybody was wringing their hands on the Republican side saying, oh, no, oh, no, this is going to hurt Mitt Romney, that I was of the opinion that the wise elders of the Republican Party, who absolutely have the power to prevent this from happening, were sitting back chuckling, saying, isn't this great? This means that this will not be an issue that Barack Obama can use in the election. And as my evidence of that, and a number of people called and said, you're crazy. Other people called and said, maybe, maybe they're playing chess here, or maybe they're just, it's just going to work to their advantage. But this morning on MSNBC, Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough, the former congressman, hard right wing Republican congressman from Georgia, as I recall, or wherever he was from. No, he was from Florida. In any case, Rick Scarborough had this to say.
But we've had the first volley of attacks against Bain Capital, and they missed wildly. There were all of these stories that have gotten debunked this past weekend by the Wall Street Journal, by the Washington Post, by the New York Times.
See, and that's what's going to be said over and over and over again whenever Democrats try to bring up Bain Capital in November, mark my words. On the line with me is Peter Suderman, who is with Reason. He's the senior editor of Reason Magazine. Reason.com is the website, the libertarian-leaning publication. And, Peter, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. As a person who is far more in the conservative spectrum than I am, I call myself a democratic socialist, which puts me, I suppose, to the left of Democrats. And as a libertarian, some would argue that you're to the right of the Republicans. What are your thoughts on this?
So, you know, I'm a libertarian, and just to clarify there, that means that I certainly have conservative friends, and we agree on many issues. I also have liberal friends. We agree on many issues. I wouldn't really put myself in either camp. But sure, it's true that that I've talked with conservatives about Romney, that and that, you know, a lot of the libertarian concerns about Romney are the same kinds of concerns that some of the conservatives who oppose Romney have. And so I think that you're right here to say that ultimately Gingrich's attacks on Romney's Bain record are going to benefit Romney, because what they're going to do is they're going to make it harder for the White House to roll out those attacks. If you presume that Romney is the front runner and that he's probably going to win the nomination, then it's going to make it harder for the Obama campaign to roll out the same kind of attacks in September, October, you know, at the end of the year when the national election takes place. But I don't think there's any conspiracy here. I don't think there's anything, there's any sort of Republican leadership sitting back and going, let's get this out of the way now. I think, in fact, you know, my read of the situation was that on Monday of last week, Republican leadership was actually scared that Newt Gingrich would do a whole lot of damage to the person who they thought is the best chance to had the best chance of beating Obama.
Yeah,
and
Romney.
Maybe
I don't disagree with you that this came about in large part because Newt Gingrich did the same thing he did when Bill Clinton was flying back from wherever he was and on Air Force One, and he sent Newt Gingrich back to the back third of the plane rather than up front with the you know, with the big shots when Newt was Speaker of the House. Newt was so offended that he shut down the government. And, you know, the New York Post, I think it was, had this famous now front page cartoon of Newt as a baby with a diaper holding a bottle, throwing a tantrum the day that he shut down the government. And it hurt Newt. It hurt Newt badly, and I think that he is, you know, I think that there's personal animus here. That said, and I agree with you that at first when these attacks came out, the wise elders in the Republican Party were looking at this going, wait a minute, this is not a good thing, because what's happening is that the campaign ads for the Democrats are being made right now and they will be used. And there's no doubt in my mind that that will happen. But I think that they've been defanged considerably. If even now, just 5 days later, you have a credible Republican in Joe Scarborough saying, oh, this stuff has been debunked. And in fact, some of the claims that were made against Romney were so over the top, and they were about things that Bain did after Romney left Bain, although he's still a stockholder, but after, and he's still getting revenue from it, but after he was no longer involved in the active management of it. And therefore, they weren't, you know, reasonable attacks that he was doing these things, that's going to end up being the narrative.
Yeah. So, you know, the Wall Street Journal's reporting on Romney's Bain career has been really solid and really good. And it, you know, it's reporting. So it's not an attack explicitly. It's not taking a side one way or another. And what Gingrich and his, the people associated with him, his super PAC Winning the Future, which is associated in some ways, it's pro Newt, but doesn't coordinate with the campaign. Their attacks have been, as you say, not just sort of taken out of context, but just factually wrong in many cases.
Right.
And that's going to help it. That's going to help make the case against listening and listening to those attacks. September, October, when the Obama team would presumably have been making these sorts of criticisms.
So,
the other thing I want to throw in here is that these criticisms aren't entirely new. You go back and you read New York Times reporting on Romney's Bain career from 2007, and they covered a lot of the same territory,
yes,
noting that a lot of what he did involved creative destruction, involved coming into companies and laying off workers, and that was part of what he did.
So here's the question: your party, the Libertarian Party, the party that I don't know if you're a member or not, but
I am not.
Okay, but I'm guessing you're voting Libertarian, right?
So I work for a C3 nonprofit. We don't support any particular
okay.
politician.
Well, let's speak in the abstract then. We're talking with Peter Sitterman, by the way, who is the columnist and senior editor of Reason Magazine, Reason.com. Let's speak in the abstract about libertarians in general. Libertarians in the fall they're going to have a candidate. The odds are it probably won't be Ron Paul, but who knows. but there's going to be a Libertarian candidate for president. And my guess is that some of the Libertarians will use some of this Bain stuff, or at least want to, against Romney, just as the Democrats will want to use it against Romney. In the minute we have left, how could that be done now?
So I actually would disagree with that. I think that the Libertarian problems with Romney are his record as governor of Massachusetts, his record of raising fees, his record of inventing the health care reform that led to Obamacare, that the Obama administration has said was the model for Obamacare. And so I don't think that Libertarians are nearly as concerned with this. I do think that liberal voters and that moderate voters may have some pauses, may have some concerns about this, because Romney is going to come off looking more out of touch and more like a sort of a distant capitalist, which is what he needs to avoid.
But it's what he is. I mean, he's a millionaire who's become a hundred millionaire by virtue of being a vulture fund operator.
I would say that he has helped the economy create value, and that there's pretty good evidence that that Bain and companies like Bain did that pretty consistently.
Well, I would argue that he never made a thing, but we that's an argument that that we could have. We'll have to have it another time, Peter.
But thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, Peter Sitterman, Reason.com, of course, if you want to find his writings and his readings. Thank you, Peter, for being with us. Appreciate it. We'll be back. Tom Hartman here with you. 15 minutes past the hour. Washington, D.C.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, am I vindicated? I don't know. I mean, time will tell. Time will tell, clearly. But it's going to be an interesting year.
District by district, your campaign is gonna have a very big news day. Your campaign could end up with a win or a lose day. Tuesday, Tuesday. Oh,
defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, and Gary in New Leipzig, North Dakota. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Well, I used to work as a security officer in a large mental institution. One day I found Marines going from adult unit to adult unit trying to recruit. So I went to remove them from the institution, and they presented me with letters from the governor and the director of mental health, which allowed them to recruit from the mental institutions. And as I was sent, they had all kind of ways handy.
Wow, that's not a good thing.
It may explain some of the events in the news here recently.
Yeah, it may. And the fact that the standards, ever since Bush declared these two illegal wars, and we needed more and more cannon fodder, basically, more and more people, and we don't have a draft. And so the standards to get into the military, they started accepting people who had felonies on their records, whereas before they wouldn't. They started accepting people who didn't even have high school diplomas, whereas before they wouldn't. And on it goes. And so, it's really a tragedy about our military. We really need, thank you, Gary, for the call. We really need a draft in the United States. If we're going to be in a position where we're going to play empire and we're going to have wars around the world, which I don't think we should do, but if we're going to do that, then at least, as Charlie Rangel so eloquently points out, at least make sure everybody participates, because then we won't do the insanely stupid things like Afghanistan and Iraq. If even the children of members of Congress have to go off to war, then maybe the members of Congress will think twice before they declare these wars, although none of these wars have been declared, but before they, pay for them. Mike in Los Angeles. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening to KTLK. What's up?
Hi. Well, I don't want to defend corporations, but I have a question about your amendment to say corporations aren't people.
Right.
And the problem is that the concept that the term person applies to both natural persons and corporations goes back a century, two centuries, I'm not sure.
It actually goes back to the 7th century. It goes back over a millennia.
Okay. So in the U.S., if that amendment passed, you'd be changing. This is why I don't think it has a chance of passing, unless you could limit it, because it would be changing thousands and tens of thousands of laws in every state and city in the country, and God knows how many case laws. I don't see how if you tried to say just in one fell swoop, nope, not anymore, I think you just have a massive reaction from every corner, unless you can limit it to say it doesn't apply specifically in terms of free speech.
There's a very specific excellent identification of a piece of this puzzle that most people would never think of. So let me just lay it out. from the seventh, from British common law in the 7th century until literally today, there are two kinds of persons at law. There are natural persons, which is you and me, and only natural persons, for example, have the right to marry. Only natural persons have the right to inherit. Only natural persons have the right to funerals. Well, I don't know if there's a right to funerals, but you get it. There's natural persons. That's human beings. And then there's a second category of persons. It's called artificial persons. And they've been called artificial persons since the 7th century, since the 8th century in the UK, and forever in the United States. And artificial persons are corporations, governments, churches, and for-profit and not-for-profit corporations. And natural and artificial persons should exist, always have existed, and would continue to exist into the future if we simply said that that when the Constitution uses the word person, it is referring to natural persons, not artificial persons. What that means is that corporations, and the reason why artificial persons have to exist is so that they can own land, so that they can engage in business, so they can sue and be sued, you know, but not so that they can vote, not so that they can marry, not so that they can have children, those kinds of things. So the amendment over at Move to Amend, and if you read it at movetoamend.org, it's quite explicit, quite clear, says that natural persons shall have rights under the Constitution. Entities that are not natural persons, which would be all artificial persons, shall not have those rights. And that's not going to really blow up that much case law or that much law in states, counties, or at the federal level, frankly, although there have been some laws passed over the last few decades that have identified both natural and artificial persons as a single lumped category, and those will have to change. But that's the distinction. That's how it's always been, and that's what the amendment would do, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so enthusiastic about it, why I'm such a defender of it. Bonnie in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Hey, Bonnie, what's up?
Tom, are you familiar with the book Holy Terror by Flo Conway and Sigelman?
I am not.
Interesting book. I reread it. I'm 78 years old, and I reread it this week. And it is the Holy Terror. It is about the coalition of fundamentalists and ultra-conservative politicians to become a potent force in politics and our private lives.
Mm.
And the whole book talks about how they are coldly and calculatingly determined to make the United States of America a Christian nation.
A theocracy, essentially.
Nation.
Yeah, Bonnie said the title of the book is Holy Terror.
Holy Terror.
Holy Terror,
Flo Conway and Jim Sigelman.
Great. I'll check it out. Bonnie, thank you very much for the heads up. Jeff Charlotte wrote a great book called The Family, which lays out much of the same thing. Denver in Nashville, Tennessee. Denver, we got a minute to the break. What's up?
All right, Tom. Since it was the Supreme Court that gave these rights, basically, to corporations to be a person, and furthered by the Nixon administration's Supreme Court, how much trouble would it be for us to impeach a Supreme Court justice? Remember when in the 60s you saw these billboards, impeach Earl Warren?
Yep.
How much trouble would it be to impeach a Supreme Court justice?
You'd have to get two-thirds of the members of the Senate to do it. And just like impeaching a president, you can impeach any federal officer, and including any federal judge, including a Supreme Court justice. But I just don't think that the stomach for it exists in Congress. The other thing that Congress could do, Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution specifically says that Congress can regulate what the Supreme Court can decide on. They could simply pass a law saying the Supreme Court can't decide on corporate personhood. But I don't think that they have the courage to do it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And unfortunately, a lack of backbone on the part of Congress, or the fact that they're bought out, so many of them, is why we have to have a constitutional amendment.
Demanding justice and a piece of the pie, not just the crumbs or another lie. He said the river is rising, won't be long.
Speaking the truth, the multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Michael in New York City. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great.
I have a question. I've been listening to, been holding my breath as I've been listening to the Republican the debates and, you know, some of these town hall meetings. You know, it's come to my attention that nobody's asked the questions and nobody's even discussed how these things are going to be deficit neutral, all these tax cuts they're proposing. Mm-hmm. Have you heard anybody speak about that?
The Republicans believe in magic tax cut dust. It's, you know, a variation on Tinkerbell's fairy dust. And going back to the presidency of Ronald Reagan, they believe that if you sprinkle tax cut dust on things, that prosperity appears.
And the deficit goes down.
That's right. There's never been an actual or absolute demonstration of this. The economy continually grows in the United States. I mean, there's no way around that because population grows and because business grows. And, I mean, you know, the economy just always grows. Mm-hmm. And so what they will point out to you is that Ronald Reagan pushed through a big tax cut in 1981, and wasn't that wonderful? Over the next 8 years, the economy grew. They will not point out to you that in 1982, we had a recession right after that tax cut that was the second worst behind the Great Depression. In fact, it was even worse than the one we have right now. They will point to you that unemployment when Reagan ended his term at the end of 8 years was reasonably good. It was six and something and change. They won't point out to you that during the Reagan administration, unemployment went over 12%. It was far worse than we have right now. And that was around the time of his second tax cut. So, over time, of course, economies grow and they'll say, well, you know, the Reagan administration produced X million new jobs or Bush cut taxes and he created X million new jobs.
Yeah.
Well, that could have happened. You could attribute that to the president picking his nose. I mean, it's like there is no empirical evidence that cutting taxes will increase or stimulate the economy in any way. There is plenty of empirical evidence that cutting taxes does create an unstable economy, a lottery economy. It creates a lot of hot money that causes the stock market and other parts of the, particularly the financial sector, services sector, to become far more unstable. You get these wild swings that happen when the top tax rate is below 50% that stabilize out when it's above 50%.
And just one other question I wanted to ask you, okay? Regarding the flat tax that they're talking about, reducing the taxes,
right?
Do they really want us to believe that the biggest corporate donors and the biggest lobbyists for the industry, the oil industry, insurance, are going to be acceptable where they're paying zero tax now, that they'll be accepting paying 25% tax?
They really want us to believe that, Michael, yeah.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah. And besides that, the whole flat tax thing is crazy. I mean, what it would do is it would be a massive tax cut. Most of the flat taxes are between 17% and 21%. Right now, the wealthiest people in America, when they pay taxes on earned income, on actual wages, they pay 36%. That would drop down to somewhere between 17% and 21%. On the other hand, about half of Americans, now before the Great Recession, it was about 40%. Now it's about 48%, I think, of Americans are so poor, basically. They make so little that they pay 100% of their income is taxed for Social Security and Medicare. They pay, payroll taxes, and they pay sales taxes, and they pay fees and all those kind of things, but they don't pay federal income taxes.
And
all
of
those people...
And they don't like to bring all those other taxes. I have
right.
even the illegal people that are here illegally pay sales tax.
Yeah, you're right. But suddenly what they want to say is they want to say the people who are so poor that, you know, the greeters at Walmart who are making just barely enough to choose between their prescription drugs or cat food, those people suddenly are going to have to start paying 10, 15, 20% taxes.
Yes.
It's crazy. Michael, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Archie in Yucca Valley, California. Hey, Archie, what's up?
Hi. I love the little debate on lying. You know, if lying is okay in politics, why have the people in corporations lie but do harm to the people through fraud, you know, subprimes, wire loans, et cetera, then our keepers of law should get to names and prosecute the people working for the corps.
Yeah, and no, I think we
with
should.
Fines, but not with fines. But with
jail time,
and we know all this reaches all the way to the top. And I know I have much love to give you a little quote because you give them to us. And I found them for you. What conservatism is not adherence to old and tried against the new and untried.
Yeah, it's yeah. So the conservative position would be, we had our greatest time of prosperity in the United States, and thank you, Archie, for the call. We had our greatest time of prosperity in the United States from the 1940s to the 1980s, when the top tax rate was 90%, between 74 and 91%, when corporations were paying 35% of the total tax input into the federal government. Now it's like in the neighborhood of 11%. When 25% of America was unionized, when, in fact, it was 34% was the peak in 1947. So the conservative position would be, say, hey, you know, that worked. It's tried and true. We should go back to it by virtue of your quote. And I'm with you on that. James in Franklin, Tennessee. Hey, James, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, thanks for having me. Good talking to you again. We're going to have a Occupy Nashville. We're having a rally Friday at 2 o'clock on Citizens United.
Great.
We're going to try to do something, you know, to have a little rally on this. And the man that's calling in a while ago, Denver from Nashville, I wish he'd come out. He didn't mention it, but I wish everybody in the area would show up, because corporations are not people, and corporations are not looking out for us. Corporations are looking out for money for corporations.
You got it. So James, it's Friday.
Yeah, the other thing is going to check, sir.
It's Friday, 2 o'clock. Where?
And Legislative Plaza, Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, great. James, thank you.
At the State Capitol Building.
Great. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for letting everybody know. And sounds fascinating. John in Massapequa, New York. Am I saying it right, John?
Hey, Don. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
That's Massapequa, New York.
Massapequa, okay. What's on your mind?
That's all right. I just want to make a statement that if corporations, people, then the body of the corporation, how do you separate that from the lobbyists? Is that the extremities of the corporation?
the fingernails? I don't know.
I mean, you can't separate them. You can't separate them from each other without killing the body.
Yeah, you're right. And thank you for that, John. Well, a lot of people call in with these rhetorical questions. You know, if corporations are people, then why can't they marry? Or if corporations are people and they buy three other corporations, why aren't they convicted of polygamy? Excellent questions. Debbie in Portland, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Debbie, what's up?
Hey, Tom, and shout out to Louise Higgins.
Okay.
Missy out here. Okay. I've got one of those rhetorical ones. All those poor students and graduates with those heavy student loans,
mm-hmm.
If we could find a state like maybe Barry, like Sanders in Vermont, who would allow us to incorporate, we could all file bankruptcy and that'll be the end of it.
Oh, for things like student loans, you mean?
Yeah, since we can't discharge them in bankruptcy, but
right.
If we all became a corporation, we would be able to do that.
You're right. You're right. Maybe students should incorporate before they go apply for the loan, but then of course the bank won't give it to them because the banks just wrote these laws. So it's that horrible catch 22. But excellent point, Debbie.
So if we go back to the way that we did it before in the 80s, where they were federally subsidized and straight from the federal government, not from these private corporations, we wouldn't have the problem we have now.
Yeah, well, you know, did you know that President Obama did that? He kicked the for-profit corporations out of the student loan business about six, 8 months ago, and it's now, you know, they're federal loans. And so we still have to change the bankruptcy laws. That's a whole separate thing. But
exactly. But, and the other thing is he didn't do the back end. He still is allowing the sharks, like Sallie Mae and Premier and those guys, collect the loans, and they're the ones who are so horrible in their collections and have no regulation.
We have a long way to go, and again, that's why we need to have an aroused and active citizenry. By the way, Louise wants me to let you know that Higgins, our cat, who you greeted when you came on, was very glad to see us when we came home last night from being gone for a week. He hates it when I travel. He was following me around the house going, meow, 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 meow. He just would not shut up. Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Debbie, thanks a lot
for
the call and for listening in Portland on KPOJ. Linwood in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hey, Linwood, we got about a minute to the break. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? I'm talking about today, as we're here celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday, and we're talking about economic inequality, and we're talking about these other issues. not enough in our mainstream media has been emphasized on the poor.
I agree.
And, you know, as we have this holiday, and this is what King fought for in the last few days, or the last few years of his life, was the economic inequality of not just black Americans, but all Americans.
Yep.
And I think when we talk about poverty, it's always a black thing. Poverty is an American problem.
Yes. And in fact, there are more white Americans in poverty than black Americans numerically. Although as a percentage, it hits the African-American community harder. But you're absolutely right. And Martin Luther King did point that out and, in fact, you know, died fighting for the rights of working people and the dignity of working people and the right to unionize. Linwood, thank you so much for the call and for pointing that out.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service and then be back with more of your calls and thoughts as the day continues. Welcome back to Talk Media for the Sane Among Us, the Tom Hartman Program. The Talk Radio News Service has today off because it's Martin Luther King Day, so they will be back with us tomorrow. So let's pick up some of your calls on this. Rick in Venetia, California. Rick, what's up?
Tom, it's Benicia. Benicia.
Benicia.
Okay,
you got it.
Question. On the Citizens United,
mm-hmm.
does that show human rights to corporations or U.S. citizen rights to corporations?
Human rights. The Constitution does not, until the 14th Amendment was passed in 1868, the Constitution did not differentiate between citizens and non-citizens. It simply says persons. And the 14th Amendment established when a person was a citizen, but then it goes on to talk about persons, not citizens. So the Constitution, throughout the Constitution, does not refer to citizens. It refers to persons, with the exception of where it says that if you're running for president of the United States, you must be a natural born citizen. And if you're running for a member of Congress, the House or Senate, you have to be a citizen. That's it.
Okay, so it's just human rights and not citizenry rights.
That's correct.
If it was citizenry rights, then all corporations would be owned and operated by U.S. citizens.
Yes, and this is one of the reasons why in Stevens's dissent in Citizens United, he said under the logic of this decision, Citizens United decision, it would give Tokyo Rose the same rights as anybody else from World War II. Now, Stevens is old enough to remember World War II, but it would also give transnational corporations and foreign governments the right to speak in the United States. They simply need to create an American front group. So, you know, it's a real problem. Thank you for the call. By the way, Occupy the Courts is going to be Friday at noon this week at the Supreme Court. I'll be at the Supreme Court occupying the Supreme Court. So be there or be square. JJ in Atlanta. Hey, JJ, what's on your mind today?
I think that Jim Hightower had it right. We'll know that corporations are people when Texas executes one.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Jim Hightower is the master of the one-liner, and that is an absolutely brilliant one. Thanks a lot for the call. David in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I was driving in the car and listening to your present radio show, and I parked and came in the house. And the last call I heard was telling you about Occupy the Courts, and I didn't know if you're aware this is taking place all over the country.
So. Oh, it is. I'm going to be occupying the Supreme Court on Friday. During the first hour of this program, we're going to have, I'll be over there for an hour, and then I'll be back here. It's happening in federal courthouses all across the country, and you can get the information over at movetoamend.org. If you want to participate. I think right now they're up to like 80 or 90 different federal courthouses around the country that are going to be occupied.
Yes, they have a Move to Amend has a map of the country and little flags all over the country where this is taking place, and it's truly widespread and kind of all over the country.
Yeah, and you can participate in it. Just go to movetoamend.org. All the information's there, and it's this Friday, it's this weekend, and then on Saturday there's a Occupy the Corporations action that I believe Public Citizen is doing. Check publiccitizen.org. I'm pretty sure that they're the ones doing that, but it's the courts on Friday, it's the corporations on Saturday. Thanks a lot, David, for the call. Andrew in Durham, North Carolina. It's Saturday, by the way, is the anniversary of Citizens United. Andrew in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Andrew, what's up?
Hey, happy Martin Luther King Day.
And the same to you, too.
Quick question for you.
I'm fairly new, Tom, to listening to your show. I'm actually seeing you on DirecTV now.
Mm-hmm.
Quick question. I understand your disagreement with Zina, and I'm trying to educate myself a little bit more. My question about the particular act and its implications, my question is in terms of the unions being able to participate, do they against union as an organization donating money and mass to political campaigns?
Yes. There's a sort of a battle within the Anti-Citizens United group, okay, against, you know, within people who are opposed to it. And some are saying that only the rights of for-profit corporations should be stripped and that not-for-profit corporations and unions should still be allowed to donate to political campaigns. And my concern with that, and in fact, if you go back and you look at the history of the United States, in 1907, during the Teddy Roosevelt administration, the Tillman Act was passed, which made it illegal for for-profit corporations to give money to federal candidates, but not unions. Unions could still give money to federal candidates. And that was changed in 1947 with the Taft-Hartley Act, which forbids unions from giving money directly to political campaigns. So,
I'm sorry. I just want to offer my just a brief experience because I want to be respectful of your time. I'm a former union. I used to graduate from college, and I was a construction laborer in New York City.
Yeah,
I was part of the union at that time.
You're breaking up really badly, Andrew.
I'm sorry. Long story short, I used to be a union member for construction in New York City.
Right.
I was in college, and I was growing up in my 20s.
Right.
And I was forced to participate in this union, all right, had to say the candidate, I, to the people particularly.
Andrew, I'm sorry, you're breaking up so badly that I'm only hearing every other word. But let me just finish this thought that this schism in the anti-corporate personhood world, one group is saying, let's just deny corporations corporate personhood. The other group, which I'm a part of, says, deny it to everybody. Only let people have human rights. And the reason why I think that this would actually, now I know that there are unions who are saying, oh no, you know, deny it to the corporations, but not to unions. And I'm suggesting that unions, not-for-profits, and for-profit corporations, none of them should be able to involve themselves in politics if Congress passes laws to forbid that. In other words, they should not have First Amendment rights. And the reason why is because a union is a democratic institution. So if the head of a union, if the union management or says, you know, we all really should get out there and show up and support so-and-so as a candidate, odds are fairly high, since more than 51% of the people voted to put that person in office, that you're going to get a lot of participation. Corporations, on the other hand, are kingdoms. If you know, the CEO of the corporation says, hey, everybody, go out there and help out so-and-so, this candidate, most people are going to say, hey, forget it. I'm not going to do it just because you write my paycheck. So and the other problem is that for-profit corporations and rich people will simply create unions or will create not-for-profits purely for the purposes of influencing politics. Keep in mind, Citizens United itself, the nonprofit corporation that created the Hillary Clinton hit movie that led to the lawsuit, Citizens United was a nonprofit corporation.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So let's have a conversation about how things could or should work in the United States. I find this whole thing just to be a fascinating question. You know, how do you put together, how do you make things work? How economically, how do you make things work? And, you know, Mitt Romney is being attacked for being a corporate raider. Tom Pawkin is on the line. He's the chair of the Texas Workforce Commission and the former head of the Republican Party of Texas. And his website, Tom Pawkin, PAUKEN.com. And, Tom, first of all, welcome to the program.
Good to be back, Tom.
Thank you for joining us. You're suggesting in a recent post over at TomPawkin.com that we should have basically a value-added tax, a VAT tax that do I have that right, first of all?
Effectively, it's a border-adjusted consumption tax to replace our
corporate income tax with its 35% rate, because the current system rewards debt, so it's great for the Wall Street private equity moguls because they load companies up with debt. Debt
right.
is deductible, and equity, capital
right.
investment, employment, and savings are punitively taxed. So reverse
right.
the dynamics, and you'll take the power away from the Wall Street financial engineers who dominate the American economy today. And I argue a principal reason for that is because of the way we tax business in America.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that, and at least in the macro. And you're right that the This is why Mitt Romney was worth over $400 million. This is or is worth somewhere between $200 and $400 million. And why all these John Paulson is made $4 billion last year is that we have a tax system that rewards debt because debt is tax deductible. Now, if I could just try for our listeners, let me just convert some of this into English, okay? Because I think I'm concerned that you and I may be talking. Using language that some of our listeners may not be familiar with. First of all, the way a value added tax, my understanding of how a value added tax works, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that at each stage of production, whether it's in intra-company or inter-company, at each stage of production, when value is added to a product, that increased value is taxed. So, for example, if you bring iron ore in and make it into steel, you've increased its value, the value of the iron ore, and so there is a tax put on the increase in the value. When that steel is made into steel, rolled steel, there is an increase in value, that's taxed. When that rolled steel is made into a car door, that increased value is taxed. When that car door is added to a car, that increased value is taxed. And then when the car is sold, that value-added tax now has been embedded into all the various additions of value, and the way that that other countries, particularly the exporting countries like France, Germany, China, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, the way that they're sneaking around the fact that we've no longer, they're not sneaking, they're doing it right out in the open. The way that they're getting around the fact that we have, as a world, basically, with the World Trade Organization, gotten away from tariffs, where we used to say, if you make something in Germany, we're going to charge a 20% import tax on it. They, by reversing out that VAT tax, by saying, okay, there's an 18% VAT tax built into this BMW, but if you buy it across borders, we're going to reverse that tax out. What they're doing is they're putting up a 20 or an 18% tariff in effect
right.
for anything made in the United States.
You're absolutely right. It's a border adjusted consumption tax, but it's a stealth tariff. Germany, as an example, has a 19% tax advantage over us. So when we hit the border with a U.S. product, they tax us at 19%. What we need to do, in my estimation, is as exports come into the U.S., an 8% border-adjusted consumption tax or a VAT, all goods and services coming into the U.S. would be taxed at 8%. And it's important to note you get a tax abatement or tax credit on your business consumption tax here at home as you export overseas. I do think it's important to note.
In other words, we play their game.
Yeah, I do think it's important to note. People get a little confused and they think, oh my gosh, you're going to tax this thing way on up. But it 8% is the maximum that can be taxed, and it's rebated as the tax is paid. So it's
right.
a total of 8%. It's not 8%, 8%, 8%. And that's the risk of going to a national sales tax because you can
sure.
be taxed at double in a
sure,
sense,
but most of the countries that have VAT taxes,
right.
most of the European countries and most of the Southeast Asian countries that have VAT taxes, both as a way of generating, basically corporate income tax revenue from their domestic sales and domestic corporations, and as a way of creating a reverse tariff to
right.
encourage exports. Most
That's
of those
correct.
Countries cap their VAT taxes between 16 and 20%.
Right.
Why,
and
if we're going to compete with them on a level playing field, why do it 8%? Why not do 18%?
Well, I think that I don't think you can get the entire, I think it has to be revenue neutral. At an 8% figure, Fritz Hollings uses the figure as 6%, but let's just say it's 6 to 8%, it would be revenue neutral and you could totally eliminate the corporate income tax. I think you've got to do it rather than lower one and put another one in. I don't think you can get the bipartisan support. So I would start.
Okay, so you're trying to do this in a way that would get Republicans on board. First of all, let me just establish who you are and what we're talking about. We're talking with Tom Paukin, and he's the chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission, former head of the Republican Party of Texas. I'm concerned that, at a certain level, I want to say to hell with the Republicans. You know, France, for example, has an 18% VAT tax plus a 19.6% corporate income tax. Germany has a 20% VAT tax and a 19% corporate income tax. The EU average of corporate income tax among all the European Union nations is 20.77%. corporate income tax. Well, that when Dwight Eisenhower was president of the United States, we not only had an average 31% import tariff on goods coming in the United States, we had 35% of the total revenue of the federal government was corporate income tax. Right now it's 11%.
Well,
so why
right.
would
and
you blow
because,
that away?
Yeah, but no, you're not. You're getting all the goods and services coming into the U.S. under the business consumption tax. Foreigners would be paying for it, it'd be revenue neutral and you'd raise just as much money as you're currently raising under the existing system.
No, I understand that. And what I'm saying is under the existing system, we're screwed. Right now, you've got corporations paying one third as much of the tax load in the United States as they did throughout most of the history of the United States.
But Tom, you have a General Electric which is paying zero right now because of all the loopholes and the special interest provisions, and they're going to have to pay 8%. Everybody's going to have to pay 8%, and you raise just as much revenue as you're currently getting, and it's going to grow because as jobs come home to America, And as you start growing the private sector again, you'll have more revenues to address.
Let's set aside the argument between you and I over whether or not we should do away with the corporate income tax, because that we're not going to resolve that. And I agree with you that if you want the Republicans on board, that's what you'd have to do. I just don't think that that's what we should do. But Tom, in the minute we have left, how do we get America talking about a VAT tax here? Most Americans don't even know what a VAT tax is.
Bruce Bartlett's got a new book out on this issue, and I'm reviewing it for the American Conservative. Fritz Hollings has an organization out pushing this. I just saw a blurb on that today. You've got Pat Choate, who ran for vice president, pushing the idea. More and more, I think the word is getting out.
But none of those are the Mitt Romneys and
no, I know.
Newt Gingrich's.
This is a sad thing. We don't have anybody on our side other than Rick Santorum, and he doesn't understand the concept, so he's talking about manufacturing. But we got to bring manufacturing jobs home to America, rebuild our manufacturing base.
I agree.
This is a way to do it. You and I may have a difference on how to approach it, but we both understand that you've got to quit rewarding these private equity moguls and allowing this massive leverage.
I am totally with you, Tom, and I encourage people to go to Tom Paukin, Pauken.com. Check it out. Thank you, Tom, for being with us.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. How do we bring manufacturing back? Why is it even important to bring manufacturing back home? Right after this.
I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream
to take a nation of failures to hold us back.
Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. And I find this particularly bizarre. Clip number 5, Jacob. John Stossel on GOP TV. I refer to Fox as GOP TV because that was the original name when Roger Ailes first proposed it to Richard Nixon back in 1973 when he worked in the Nixon White House. John Stossel on Fox TV saying, if you're not really well informed, which is code, I think, on GOP TV on Fox News for if you don't watch Fox News all the time and therefore think you're informed. It turns out, actually, people who watch no news whatsoever are more well-informed on current events than people who watch Fox News. But John Stossel's saying, don't vote. I say, what?
Here he is. Our instinct says everybody should vote, but some people are dumb or don't pay attention, and they shouldn't vote. Now, I'm not saying we should have a test or something, but I'm this endless cheerleading. Let's go to the rock concerts and register the kids, and the kids are not paying attention. And it's the people who participate ought to be the ones who pay attention. I'm a libertarian. It's acceptable to be stupid. I'm just saying we shouldn't have these get out the vote campaigns and make these statements. Everyone has to vote. It's your patriotic duty. Well, if you're not paying attention, I think it's your patriotic duty not to vote.
Yeah, and you notice that the one group in particular that he selected there was the kids. Like, you know, did you notice that it was college students who helped push President Obama over the top or who brought Democrats in? Or college students who would disproportionately participate in what are referred to as the fringe parties, in the Green Party, in the Democratic Socialist Party, in the Libertarian Party, whether it's right or left? I think that there's tremendous vitality in our young people being involved in our political process. And this John Stossel quote is just a variation on the old Paul Weyrich quote of, you know, we don't want people to vote. You know, elections are not won by the majority of voters. They never have been. They never will be. And, you know, as Republicans, we want to minimize the number of people voting. Pure and simple. Rick Santorum going after Obama. Clip number 7 here. This is Rick Santorum.
Governor Romney's plan, as much as you'd like to say it's not, was the basis of Obamacare. He was for an individual mandate. He was for government top-down control of the healthcare system. And it's led to the highest cost healthcare in the nation in Massachusetts. It's led to increased taxes. It is an absolute disaster. I have had a consistent record over that time of not being for individual mandates, and that includes the speaker. He has been for individual mandates. I have not.
Yeah, this is Rick Santorum, who I believe has a child with a pre-existing condition who will be protected under Obamacare. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a national single health care program? You know, when Louise and I were in Iceland, we spoke with, in fact, I believe we had at least one of them on this program, a number of conservatives in that country. Yes, we did. We had two of them on this program. And I said, okay, you're a conservative. You want to do away with national health care, right? Oh, no. Are you kidding? Are you crazy? You know, then we go to Sweden and we're in Stockholm and we get conservatives on the program and we say, oh, you're a conservative here, a conservative Swede. That must mean that you want to do away with national health care. Oh, no. Being conservative means that we are cautious and slow in making changes in society. And we have a national health care system here that has worked for decades and we want to keep it. Oh, really? What's astounding is that right now Sweden is controlled by a conservative government, just like David Cameron in the UK, the prime minister of the UK. You know, it's a coalition, him and Nick Clegg with the Lib Dems. But basically, it's a conservative government in the UK, and we call them conservatives. And in Sweden, they would never in their wildest dreams imagine doing away with their national healthcare system or 18 months of paid paternity and maternity leave, or a social security system that is so vibrant and healthy that you can actually retire and live off it, and live off it well enough to, you know, continue to live in your home and have a vacation and not have to reverse mortgage out your house to pay your medical bills because that's all covered and et cetera, et cetera. It's just astounding. Our Democratic Party in the United States is to the right of the conservatives in Europe. David Cameron right now is pushing through a 50% income tax on anybody in the UK who makes more than £150,000, British pounds, which would be about $230,000 a year. 50%. Obama's talking about raising it back to the Clinton levels from 36 to 39% on people who make more than $1 million a year. Oh, no, we can't have that. Republicans are concerned. Oh, we can't have that. That might balance the budget like happened during the Clinton administration. Can't do that. You may recall Newt Gingrich stood on the floor of the House of Representatives as Speaker of the House Actually, he was in the minority at the time that tax cut got passed. But he stood on the floor of the House of Representatives and gave a speech. Not one single Republican voted in the House for the tax increase that led to the balanced budget from 36% to 39% during the Clinton administration on the richest Americans. Not one Republican. And Gingrich claimed that if that tax increase passed, you would see a Great Depression like we haven't seen since the 1930s. And instead, what happened was we had prosperity and a balanced budget. And so now in the UK, David Cameron is saying we're going to raise the tax to 50% on people who make over roughly $225,000 a year. He easily has the Socialist Party, he has the Communists, he's got the Lib Dems, he's got all of them with him. And now he's saying, and the Conservative Party is going along with this, the Tories. Oh, yeah. This is why we need to have a balanced budget. France is starting to tax financial transactions. And this is a conservative government, too.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
When are we in the United States going to wake up to the fact that our middle of the road is considered their crazy right? Up next, the good, the bad, and the very, very ugly. That would be the good, the bad, and the very, very precisely ugly. The good. Fracking-free Bulgaria. Throughout Bulgaria Saturday, thousands of citizens participated in organized protests against plans for the exploration of shale gas by the U.S. company Chevron. The main argument of the citizens was that fracking, the most common method for shale gas exploration, is harmful to the environment. These protests came just days after it was learned that fracking caused earthquakes in Ohio, and it has always been an argument of environmentalists that fracking subjects both the environment and citizens to poisonous chemicals. The group that organized the protests, Fracking Free Bulgaria, was assured by the Bulgarian parliament that legislation imposing a moratorium on fracking would be considered. A big applause goes out to the citizens of Bulgaria for standing up to American corporate greed and for fighting to protect their environment. The bad. Georgia Republican State Senator Kip Smith. Smith was arrested for a DUI on Friday morning after failing a sobriety test. Why is this of note? Because Kip Smith is the same Georgia State Senator who introduced Georgia House Bill 464, which requires random testing of state citizens getting assistance from public welfare programs. That same sort of legislation has proven to be a complete waste of taxpayer money in Florida, where only 2% of those screened actually tested positive for drug use, which is actually below the national average. Regardless of it being a bad idea, if Mr. Smith wants any chance of being taken seriously in politics, maybe he should try to follow the principles of his own legislation, and let's drug test him while we're at it. And alcohol test him, too. And the very, very ugly Kansas House Speaker Mike O'Neill. O'Neill has developed a habit of forwarding nasty emails regarding the President and First Lady, but this one takes the cake. 2 weeks ago, in an email to fellow Kansas House Republicans, O'Neill referred to President Obama and a verse in the Bible that states, "Let his days be few," and also calls for his children to be without a father and his wife to become a widow. This text, which comes from Psalm 109, has actually been a popular conservative motto since President Obama was elected. And O'Neill connects the dots in that same email, writing, "At last, I can honestly voice a biblical prayer for our president. Look it up. It is word for word. Let us bow our heads and pray. Brothers and sisters, can I get an amen? Amen." Despite repeated calls, neither Mr. O'Neill or his office have offered any sort of an apology for the email. While it is one thing to be against the president, seemingly wishing for his death, his wife to be widowed, and his children to lose their father is taking it to a whole other level and is becoming all too commonplace in today's vitriolic rhetoric. And that's very, very ugly. It's really quite remarkable, too, when you consider it. James in Somerville, Massachusetts. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. What's up?
Listen, I just want to thank you for your show. I mean, there's very few people that are willing to turn them on and take on a lot of these issues. The reason why I called, Tom, was the fact of, are we beyond the point of no return? And when I say that, due to the economic situation, the corporate greed that's going on. I mean, none of these guys were ever prosecuted when it came down to, you know, the housing market. And these people knew, the bankers knew that it was phony, but went ahead and did it anyway. And unfortunately, a lot of people lost their homes. And that just, it really bothers me for the fact that, you know, what's the point of voting? Because we all know that the lobbyists are the ones that end up getting these people in. I myself being from Massachusetts, Mitt Romney being the governor, and he just totally screwed up Massachusetts, even with this Romney care, which is pretty much like the Obamacare.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you raised two issues. The first is, why aren't banksters going to jail? And the second is, why bother voting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just take them on one at a time. Louise and I were in the United Kingdom yesterday. We changed planes and spent a few hours in London. And the screaming headlines in the newspapers were, send the bankers to jail. I mean, there's this whole movement going on in the UK right now to actually imprison banksters. And it's not just in the UK, but in the UK it's most visible. It's all over the tabloids right now. It was a major front page headline 4 days ago. And then in yesterday's, I think it was the Mail was the paper that I was reading, you know, one of the major tabloids. It was the top of an inside page where they had all these letters to the editor and things about it. And there's a growing consensus that banksters who committed these kinds of crimes should be going to jail. So, you know, and I'm with you on that. And I think that that's absolutely what should happen, James. With regard to your question about why bother voting, and thank you, by the way, very much for calling and raising this issue. Let me just, you know, for the record, between now and November, there's going to be an enormous in the corporate media and the conservative media and the progressive media and the blogosphere and the all over the place. There's going to be a mind-boggling amount of bloviating designed to get a particular outcome at the polls in November. In other words, it's going to seem like the most important thing in the world is voting. Let me suggest to you that voting is important and we should all do it. It should be a civic obligation. In fact, I kind of like the fact that in Australia they have 98% voting, because if you don't vote, you get about a $25 ticket. It's like a traffic ticket the first time. And the second time it goes up to, I think it's $100, and you know, it keeps going up. So people figure, hey, what the heck, I might as well vote. Oh, by the way, I have to vote. I might as well inform myself. Now, you know, we've got this tradition in America of independence, and I don't have to do anything if the government doesn't want, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I get it. But so, A, I think it's important to vote. But far more important than voting is getting involved. And that doesn't necessarily mean joining the Republican or the Democratic Party or the Green Party or the Libertarians or the Democratic Socialists. Right? That's one way to do it. But there are also all kinds of great movements out there that you can participate in. You know, Jim Dean, Howard's brother, runs this thing called Democracy for America, democracyforamerica.com. Ben and Jerry, Ben Cohen of Ben and Jerry, has the American Majority, I think it is, something majority.org. There's movetoamend.org. There's Tim Carpenter's great organization, pdamerica.org, Progressive Democrats of America. The biggest of them all, the Occupy movement. Show up. Participate. To say, you know, why should I vote? It's almost like saying, why should I take another breath? I mean, that's, you know, yeah, of course, voting is important, and we need to get out the vote. We need everybody to vote in the United States, and it's insane that we have laws that prevent people from voting. It's insane that we have to, that we have to go through a registration process within a particular narrow window, and that the whole country doesn't do what North Dakota does, or what Iowa does for that matter, and allow same-day registration and voting. In North Dakota, they don't even register. You just show up and vote. North Dakota is also smart enough to have their own bank. But all that said, voting isn't really the important thing. I mean, it's an important thing, but the important thing is to be an engaged citizen, to inform yourself and to participate, to watch Democracy Now, to read the blogs, to listen to other voices in progressive talk radio, to read the websites truthout.org and alternate.org and commondreams.org and opednews.com and crooks and liars and the list just goes on and on. There's a bunch of great sites out there that have enormous quantities of information. I join a small community, like over at TomHartman.com. And, you know, I realize I'm blowing my own horn on this one, but there's all kinds of those out there. FireDogLick.com. I mean, there's a bunch of them. So, very, very quick. Jackie in Seattle. We got a minute to the break, Jackie. What's up?
I just wanted to say I'm really thankful for Martin Luther King and his nonviolent demonstration.
Amen.
I've been talking up the move to amend amendment with friends and neighbors. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, my neighbor, we were talking about Section 3 and how nothing contained in the amendment shall be construed to abridge the freedom of the press.
That's right.
And she said, but newspapers are corporations and media is corporations.
Right.
And is there a conflict there, and how do I explain that?
Well, in order to break up the media monopoly, we need to be enforcing the Sherman Act, and that's a whole completely separate conversation. But if you didn't have that thing in there that said nothing shall be construed to abridge freedom of the press, then the constitutional amendment would find itself in direct conflict with the First Amendment, according to the Supreme Court. And so this is a way of basically slapping down the Supreme Court and saying, no, this is not a freedom of speech or freedom of the press issue. And now, in terms of the press being owned by corporations and being a very small number of very loud voices, that's something that we have to deal with at the level of the Sherman Act. And once you get corporations no longer being able to fund politicians, then you'll see politicians say, great, let's start breaking them up, in my opinion. Thanks for the call, Jackie.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Are anti-American capitalists killing the U.S. economy? Is that what it is? Right after this.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, Leonard Cohen. Good Canadian, calling for democracy in the United States. It would be a fine thing. Yabuba. Am I saying that right? In Tucson, Arizona?
Yeah. Yabuda.
Yeah, Yabuda. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind today?
It's not Yabuda. It's Yahuda.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. The thing is that we're having jobs. This started back during the Nixon era, when he opened up China. Most people didn't recognize the fact of what was going on, that the anti-American capitalistic pigs in this country wanted to send jobs overseas so that they could make a fortune,
yep,
such as the Walmarts and et cetera like that. The whole point is that importers, which Walmart is, and the holding company that holds Kmart and Sears, because you can't find nothing hardly anymore that isn't manufactured in China in those stores. And the whole point is that the United States puts tariffs on, but then allows the importer to implement a tariff reimbursement system where the consumer has to pay that tariff.
Well, we actually don't impose tariffs of any consequence any longer. When Nixon was in office, the top tariff, average tariff rates in the United States were in the 20% region, between 20 and 30%. Now they average less than 2%, right in the neighborhood of 2%. So the import tariffs that we have are pretty much in name only. There's still over 20,000 of them, you know, different categories, tariff categories that you can find on the Department of Commerce's website. But the, you know, the tariffs have just dropped off the edge of the earth. And that's one of the reasons. And it's not just China. It's countries all over the world. I mean, you find German cars in the United States. You find things made in Canada in the United States. You find things made in Mexico in the United States. We no longer have, and you're right, Nixon began this process. Reagan really kicked it into gear, and then it really went crazy in the 90s when we joined the WTO and NAFTA and GATT and SHAFTA and everything else. What we have is we no longer have a national industrial policy, and we no longer have a national trade policy. And the rationale about this, what brought this about, was this belief that, oh, you don't need industry to have an economy anymore. It's a new economy. It's an information economy. And, well, yeah, okay, that's a new piece of the economy. But if you don't, as Adam Smith pointed out in Wealth of Nations in 1776, wealth is the product of raw materials having human labor applied to them. In other words, you don't have value, you don't have actual wealth until you create something or you mine something or you grow something. That you have to, you know, that it has to be, that simply being on Wall Street and moving numbers from one screen to another and taking home $1 billion a year for doing it is not creating wealth. It is sucking wealth off the top of the economy. So, yeah, I'm with you, you know, and well said at that. Suzette in Las Vegas. Hey, Suzette, what's up?
Well, going back to the taxes, you know, President Bush gave the rich and the corporate rich the big tax breaks to create jobs. Obviously, the jobs were not created, so wouldn't it be logical to go back and retroactively collect these taxes that weren't paid since they didn't create the jobs that they promised if they could just get these breaks?
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense. The problem is it would be illegal or unconstitutional. The Constitution says that Congress shall pass no laws that reach back into the past. There's a Latin phrase for it that is escaping me, but Congress shall pass none of those kinds of laws. So you can't make something retroactively illegal or retroactively that you must pay.
No, I mean just go back and collect the taxes because they said
but the tax laws
going to create jobs, and they didn't.
Right, and they didn't. But see, taxes are the function of law. You pass a law to change the tax rates, and because we can't create, it's illegal to pass post facto, I think is the name, laws because you can't do that. It's a great idea.
Well,
I mean, the solution is at least let's just learn from the experience and raise taxes back to where they were. Suzette, thank you very much. Excellent, excellent point that you made in any case. Paul, listening in Portland on KPOJ. Hey, Paul, what's up? Paul? No, Paul. Okay, John in Seattle. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Well, Tom, I'm thinking, why don't they just cut taxes completely on the bottom third of the population, and they just go out and spend everything, and it would go through the hands of the wealthy and get to the government in taxes anyways?
Well, they're sort of moving in that direction by reducing the amount paid into the payroll tax by 2%. This working person's tax cut that the Obama administration has been pushing for the last 2 years. I disagree that it should be on Social Security taxes. I also disagree, though, that after $108,000 of income, people shouldn't have to pay any Social Security tax. I think there should be no cap there. I get your point. The fact of the matter is when it comes to federal income taxes, it used to be in the high 30s, low 40s. Now it's in the high 40s. Maybe even around 50% of Americans don't pay federal income taxes because there's so much poverty in the United States as the result of the Great Bush Depression. So thanks a lot for the call. Jim in Kalamazoo. Hey, Jim, last minute of the show. What's up?
Yeah, you know how Time Magazine, the first of the year, declared the generic protester person
yeah.
of the year?
Yeah.
Well, in your audience, you have a rather enlightened audience. And I'd like to see someone with a little bit of creativity put Bradley Manning in there.
Yeah.
Because it was Bradley Manning's information, you know, the State Department cables. In fact, during the whole Arab Spring thing, the only accurate information we had were those cables. Everything else was a bunch of BS.
Yeah, not just
but
the cables. He also leaked the video of the soldiers killing those two two AP reporters.
That's what kicked it off. He should be presented as the man of the year. That led to the Arab Spring. That led to Europe. That led to Occupy.
Yeah.
The whole thing was all connected.
I would call him the whistleblower of the year, Jim. And you know, I think that to some extent there should be absolute protections for whistleblowers on those things. Coming up tomorrow, Union Busters, why the Employee Rights Act is really wrong. And don't forget, democracy begins when you get active. It's not enough to just vote. Participate. Get out there. Get active. Tag. You're it. Occupy something. We'll see you tomorrow here on Occupy the Airwaves.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.